everybody, welcome to Bass University Live. It's great to have all you guys back. We are here live, and we have one of the best anglers in the history of the world, and we have Brian Thrift with us tonight.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It's great to have you, buddy. I appreciate you making the trip, and a lot of you guys have watched Brian Thrift's seminars with Bass University, and they're some of the best. Some of your stuff, I didn't know if you knew this or not, but it's some of the most viewed seminars that have.
That
at
I really
Bass
didn't
TV.
Know. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome, man.
That's weird because I don't feel like I really have that much to say. So that's awesome to hear something like that.
Well, it's we're glad to have you. And you know what's surprising to us is because we at Bass University we have an audience that is made up of a variety of people that have never fished tournaments, will never fish tournaments, beginners, 20, 30 year veterans. We have elite pros and top level pros that subscribe.
Right.
But our tournament seminars were something that we kind of shied away from until we watched your seminars perform so well about how to practice, how to prepare and win tournaments.
Right.
People love that stuff.
That's good. I mean, that's something that, like, I know if when I was first starting, that's what I would be interested in. Mm-hmm. Like, I would want to know, because there's kind of two different mind frames when it comes to bass fishing. You've got go fun fishing, and then you've got practice for tournaments.
And right.
To me, I would rather do that because that's how I make my living, is fishing. So I want to know how to practice and execute in an event.
Well, and you do it differently, because I've been watching this, and we're going to talk about it tonight, and we're going to open up the questions for you guys. This show, Bass University Live, is for you guys. It's for our subscribers, and our lines, our instant message board, it's open for you guys to ask Brian directly any questions you want, question about the topics that we're talking about tonight or anything that really applies to bass fishing. But you got a really unique perspective on how to practice, how to compete in tournaments. And I'm going to ask you a lot of questions about that tonight, because it's fascinating to me, because you're doing something, things a lot differently than a lot of people are. And we got our normal cast of characters in the back. We've got BTC and the Riz.
Yo.
How are you boys tonight?
Good, man.
Yeah.
Good. Started on time.
Yeah, the message board is fired up because we started on time.
Yeah. All right, we're going to give the boys an A+. Is that the second time we've started on time?
That is.
In a row?
That's back to back.
Wow.
Yeah. Brian, how you guys do with that, with Let's Talk Fish?
It kind of varies. I mean, we usually get started on time.
Okay.
But
we usually don't.
Sometimes, like, we get a lot of messages. Like, we'll put it live, like, 3 or 4 minutes before we actually go live. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just to get viewers on and get ready. And then if we go past 7 o'clock, they start calling us out if we hadn't.
Right.
If we hadn't actually started yet, they're like, what's going on? Why haven't you started yet? It's 7 o'clock.
Yeah. our people are usually, most of our people are probably not even tuned in yet because they're
expecting 7:20, 7:15.
They're expecting lateness. But
you got to keep them guessing,
That's a fact.
Well, we've done a good job at that. And you're going to see Eric the intern is going to be bounce around the studio tonight. How are there you, E?
Doing good, man. Doing good.
good to have you here. And we're going to be, we're going to be talking bass fishing. Some of the topics that we're going to start off with tonight is fishing off the bank. One of your seminars that your newest one that was just released is how to fish brush piles, how you did it down at Lake Eufaula, how you fish 70. Is that true? Are you able to fish 70 a day?
I mean, if it's an exaggeration, it's not by a lot. So, I mean, it's either a few less or a few more. I mean, it the way I was doing it there is it doesn't take long to fish them. I mean, those fish are set up. It's a small target.
Mm-hmm.
If you pretty much make two casts on it, if he's there, you're going to catch him. So you make 3 or 4 casts and go to the next one. Yep.
That's a lot. That's like 5 minutes,
Oh yeah. You're absolutely wore out at the end of the day. I mean, you're constantly picking up troll motor, mm-hmm. running to the front deck, running back to the console. I mean, it's a hard day of fishing,
man,
but it's fun.
I bet it is. I mean, you've won with it. And we're going to be talking about fishing off the bank stuff, right? brush piles, rock piles, grass ledges. That's going to be one of the things that we're going to key on tonight.
Sounds good.
Hey, Pete, real quick. You asked Mike about that last night. We were talking about tonight's show. Last night we had Ike Live, and you mentioned to Mike how many spots he could fish in a day. What'd he say? He maxed out at like 50-something?
I think 40 is what he said.
40-something on
40
the Delaware?
40 he thought he hit on the Delaware.
Yeah.
Because he was he's using that same type of pattern. It's a tidal water deal. You're fishing these very, you know, specific areas.
Right.
10 casts, 2 casts.
What makes that pattern so special is it's really hard to develop unless you have an intimate knowledge of the body of water. Like, it's almost a local technique.
Right.
And that's something, it's really hard to do when you're away from home for an event.
Right.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Because I fished down at Lake Chickamauga just recently, and I'd never had fished a tournament there before, and I couldn't find enough.
Right. It's so hard. And plus, you don't have the history, because when you're running that pattern, typically, like, you're not getting a bite on every single stop. Like, you have to know a place that, you know, it's possibly going to catch one there, but you know right where he's going to be sitting. So if he's there, you're going to catch him. And if he's not there, you go to the next one. Mm-hmm. So you've got to have enough of that stuff that there's possibly going to be one on to be able to run it. But just because, like, during practice, you may find a bunch of stuff like that, but you don't get bit on it, so you don't run it in a tournament. Whereas during the tournament, there may be one setting it.
Right.
So it's kind of weird.
So I found like 3 pieces at Chickamauga. So I just go back and forth to all 3 pieces over and over again.
That works too.
I needed a few more is what I needed. But we're going to be talking about using side imaging, because you have a really cool way that you do that. Tournament fishing, his run and gun pattern and strategy. All these types of things we're going to be talking about. You guys, if we use your question on the air, we're going to extend your subscription a month. Everybody's question who we use tonight, we're going to extend it 30 days at bashu.tv. We're taking the questions from our subscribers. If you are watching us over on Facebook, come on over and subscribe. Go over to bashu.tv, get subscribed. It's 30 days free right now. Go over and get subscribed, and you can IM Brian. You can win prizes. And we've got more than just extending your subscription tonight. We've got some great prizes that we're going to be giving away. We got some terrific trivia questions courtesy of Ken Duke from the Fishing Tackle Retailer.
What's the code to subscribe?
The code is BassULive19.
That's right, BassULive19. And we're giving away a ton of stuff tonight. We've got a grand prize tonight that we're giving away towards the end of the show that consists of a TH Marine Glory Pack, a G-Force handle, a G-Force prop nut, a Gen 2 coal system, a troll jacket, heavy-duty cable cover, and some G-Juice.
200 beans.
200 beans plus. Ooh. Bri's brought a really cool Kinect scale that we're going to be giving away.
Catch Commander.
This is an $85 value. We're going to be giving this away for one of our trivia questions. And if you absolutely refuse to subscribe to Bashu TV, we got something for you too. We love you guys too. If you're over on Facebook, like it, share it, and we are going to give you guys a prize too.
That's right. A TH Marine Gen 2 coal system and a G-Force handle valued at $97. About $100. How hard is it to like and share?
So what you should do is like it, share it, and subscribe. Ooh, and you got a chance to win everything.
Then you can win it all.
So that's what we got going on tonight. Lots of great stuff. Lots of great prizes. So let's hear from you guys over on the IM board. Riz, are you talking to people over there already?
I am already talking to people. A lot of people want to hear from Brian. So the board has been blowing up. The first question is going to come from Michael. And he wants to know, Brian, when was the turning point in your career, and when did things start to get a little easier?
Ooh, I don't know if they ever get easier. That's definitely a loaded question, because let me start with the turning point. The turning point in my career was probably 2010. I won my first angle of the year title, and I don't know if things just started clicking or I started looking at things differently, or it just took me 4 years to learn how to practice for a 4-day event or what, but 2010 was definitely my turning point when I started getting a little more consistent, having a lot more success. And as far as the other part, I mean, you never you like once you have success, you want to keep it going. Like it's like in my mind, I want to win every event, and I know it's not possible, but I get down on myself if I don't. So I'm constantly learning, constantly trying to evolve and take it to the next level to stay competitive. I mean, that's what you've got to do. I mean, everybody that bass fishes, they're constantly learning. If you're not out on the water learning something, then you're going to fall behind.
Has when you and it's a great question, Michael. By the way, Riz, what do they got to do to claim their 30 days?
They just got to send in their customer number to me.
Upper right hand corner of your screen is your customer number.
Yep. Shoot it over on the message board. I'll jot it down, and we'll make sure you get your prize promptly. Well, for this show, your prize is going to be an extra 30 days of learning about bass fishing. So send us that number.
Whether you're an annual subscriber or monthly subscriber, doesn't matter. We're gonna push your anniversary date out and keep you hooked up with Bassy TV. But you you won your first Angler of the Year title. Did things change from like a business perspective at all? I mean, I know we talked about fishing, but did you get sponsorships easier, or did things happen that way?
Yeah, that's kind of a funny story. Like when I first started, you know, I was new to the sport. I was obviously a rookie like everyone, and you know, all I've ever seen when I first started was like, oh, once you get on the tour, you know, you get sponsored, people's throwing money at you. But that's not the case when you start out.
Right.
So I spent like the first 3 years of my career, you know, sending out resumes and like I felt like I was begging for money. And I'm like, and then it finally clicked on me. Like after 2 years of that, I'm like, you know, I've got to be able to offer the sponsors something. You know, I've got to have fans. I've got to have, you know, success. That's the only way you're going to be able to sell product, which is what sponsors want. So I totally quit pursuing sponsorships. And I feel like once I did that, I started focusing more on the fishing, just like sold out fishing. And once the success came, you know, people started calling. So I didn't really have to pursue them. They kind of pursued me, I guess you'd say.
Learn how to catch them first.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's what worked for me. And I mean, a lot of anglers, there's several different trains of thought processes on that. But I mean, you can have a flamboyant personality and just be able to sell product. That's essentially what most sponsors want. They're not paying you just to sit there with a patch on your shirt. You know, you got to be able to make them some money.
Yeah.
So whatever you can do, figure out how to make a sponsor money, you're going to make a sponsor happy and you're going to get more money.
Well, you know what you
and
sold?
Catching them is going to be a good way to do that. Catching exactly. Fish, winning
that's
tournaments.
That's the way I did.
Yeah. Well, you sold me a chatterbait. I don't know if you knew that. But,
I didn't know that.
I had chatter. I told this story. I've had chatterbaits in my boat for years after a media event, and I thought they were stupid.
I heard that a lot back in the early days.
And I mean, they got no weed guard. They just a big dumb hook and this blade that doesn't make any sense. How is a fish going to bite with this blade there? It's going to look so obvious he's never going to eat it. And I was down in Florida, and you had just won with it.
Yep.
And I had him in the boat, and I still didn't throw him, but my co-angler started smashing, like caught three fish in a row. And I'm like, I got them. And I tied one on, and I caught like 40 or 50 bass that day.
Yeah.
And I'd never caught a bass on one before.
It was pretty phenomenal there the first couple of years I traveled with it. I mean, I'd had them in North Carolina for, oh, Lord, 5 or 6 years before I ever started traveling and fishing, you know, out of state events. So it kind of been kept in our area of North and South Carolina for a couple of years.
How did you get introduced to it?
Ron Davis was the guy that invented the chatterbait. He came up with it, and Rad Lures was the name of the company. And I don't know exactly how I got my hands on one. I think it was just word of mouth around the house. Mm-hmm. You know, people come up to a boat ramp and like, oh, here's a new bait. You got to go try this out and stuff. And it worked. It worked very well.
Well, I say it did. I still flubbed it because even after that, I caught 40 fish with it. Yeah. I think it was another year until you won again. And then I decided, all right, I got to add this to the arsenal.
Right. I got to figure this out. A funny story on that was in 2005, I fished the Costas as a co-angler and traveled with Andy Montgomery. He was fishing the pro side. I just fished the co-angler side. And I won two events that year as a co-angler on a chatterbait.
Really?
Yeah, and I never mentioned it. I never said anything because, you know, it's co-angler. You know, nobody's going to pay that much attention. So Ron's, and at the time, you know, the chatterbait wasn't mainstream. Nobody really knew what it was. And he's like, man, if you win again, you've got to talk about it. So I think it was the next year in 2006, I fished my first pro event, first tournament as a pro, a coast at Okeechobee, and I won it on the chatterbait. And the first day of the event, I was in like third place. And you know, when the media guys asked, like, how'd you catch them and all this? And I said, well, I caught them on a chatterbait. Like I said, at first day of the tournament. Yeah, I'm like, ain't nobody going to be able to get them no way fast enough. And Ron, he calls me the next day after the second day of the tournament and says, man, what'd you do? These people buying these things like crazy now. So it was pretty cool.
That is cool. I didn't realize that was the story because I guess he sold it to Z-Man.
Yeah, him and Z-Man formed, or Z-Man bought it from him. I think they had a partnership for a while. And, you know, it's gotten better and better. I mean, just the bait Ron had was a great bait, don't get me wrong. But Z-Man's kind of taking it to a whole nother level. I mean, the chatterbaits they've got out there now, they've got five or six, seven different models. And, you know, they're great, great baits. Like, each one's for different. I get that question a lot. Like, which chatterbait do you throw? Because they've got so many different ones. And I throw three or four different models of the chatterbait versus how I'm fishing. Like, if I'm fishing deeper, I like the Project Z head better. If I'm fishing shallower, I like the
jackhammer.
The jackhammer and stuff like that. So the different head shapes and different head designs, you know, allow the bait to act a little bit different.
Interesting. Well, I'm glad we got this on video. What do you got there, Riz?
Yeah, the questions are just pouring in, and everybody that's on the message board, thanks for being with us, guys. We really appreciate it. Justin wants to know, Brian, when you are not catching any fish, how do you stay focused and keep your head in the game?
Well, let me tell you.
Tell us.
I'll rephrase that.
The other Brian.
I usually don't keep my head.
Thrift.
I don't either. And, you know, that's how I kind of got. Everybody thinks I fish really fast, which I do, but you should see me when I'm not catching nothing, how fast I fish, because it's about twice as fast.
Come on.
It's like a snowball effect. Yeah. Like, the worse I do, the faster I go, and the less I catch.
Yeah. And so you got to talk yourself into slowing down.
I've got to talk myself in, like, because I'll get in this mind frame that, you know, if I go somewhere new, I should catch one immediately. And if I don't, I want to go somewhere else. And then instead of letting the fish tell me what I need to be doing, I'm trying to force them to do what I want them to do, and it just gets worse and worse.
That's funny, because when I go somewhere new, I'm surprised if I catch them.
I don't believe that.
You ain't the only one, Pete. I'm surprised for you.
Yeah, that's funny. Right. It catches me off guard, but no, that's interesting, because we all have to go through that, and thanks for the question, Justin. We're going to get you hooked up, but Riz, keep them coming.
Yeah, this question's from Ranger Mike. Brian, what range do you use when you're looking for brush piles on side imaging?
That depends on what size graph you're running. I run a Helix 12 Hummingbird, and I set my range on a 80 to 100 feet on each side. And to me, that gives me the best detail in that size screen. You know, the smaller screen size you go, the shorter your field of view you want, because you'll miss a lot of stuff. Like, if you've got your field of view set out at 200 feet on each side and you go past a brush pile that's the size of this desk, say 4 feet square, it's going to be very hard to see when you're looking at 200 feet on 6 inches of screen versus if you're looking at 100 feet on 6 inches of screen. So
does that change with depth with you, or
I never change it with depth, even okay. From 0 feet out to 50 feet. I leave it on the same scale, and I guess it's just how I taught myself, I guess, just being able to look at stuff. And that's the big thing about side imaging, is you've got to be able to pick up just small differences that show up on the screen. Like, I don't know how to explain this, but some things that don't return a signal very good, or something that's not casting a big shadow, if it's harder to see, that's the little places that often get overlooked. So if you see something that looks fuzzy or just a little out of place, you know, put a waypoint on it and go idle right over top of it, see what it is. But try to keep your you want your viewing field small enough that you can see stuff. Like, one good way to test it is when you launch your boat, idle out from the dock, and most boat ramps run out in the water, you know, pretty good ways. Idle right by that boat ramp and see what it looks like on your graph, and play with your settings, get the range set to where you can see it the best and you know exactly what it is. You can see the washout on the end of the ramp, and just get something you can visually see, you know exactly what it is, look at it on your side imaging, and just dial that picture in to where you can see it the best you possibly can.
That's great advice. We talked about that on the Ike Live show. I think to visually being able to see what your target is,
right,
seeing how your sonar interprets it is going to tremendously help you.
Yeah, it really does, just because you can make that connection. All right, this is what I'm looking at. I know what it looks like. Right here it is on my graph, and it looks pretty good.
Well, hey, for Ranger Mike, great question. And stay tuned, because guess what? We're on the water tomorrow with Brian, and that's one of the things that we're going to capture for you guys. Is I want Brian to teach us how he does that. I mean, what he described, we're going to do that. We're going to look at his side imaging, have him show us what the various things look like. And I'm really excited about that on the water tomorrow.
That's a lot of information I'm giving away.
I'm going to hold his feet to the fire.
I don't know if I'm ready to go that deep with it.
I knew this was coming. We're only 20 minutes in. He's squirming around. Yeah. Shut the door.
Get that bottle of whiskey.
Yeah, that's, we'll loosen him up. Don't worry, hey, guys.
Real quick, I got a question. You talked about the chatterbait when the chatterbait first came out.
Yeah.
And I remember Mike coming to me talking about it, and it's when the events in Florida, things were being won with it. I think it was Mann's made something that was sort of similar to it. Never took off, but it was like a jig with a plastic bill in front of it that kind of looked like almost like a jitterbug bill. But it would come through the water and just really just vibrate back and forth. Kind of looked more like a musky bait or something like that, but it was small, like a bass bait. I was wondering if you guys ever saw it, remember it, know what I'm talking about. Anybody on the message board? Or...
I have no idea.
No, I was sitting here trying to look for it. I can't find it.
I remember the Acre Shaker was a long time ago, and it was similar. Like, you could put it in front of any bait, but it was kind of.
This was a jig with a skirt.
Yeah.
And instead of having the loose metal blade, I think it was a fixed plastic blade, and it just really got that thing, something you would see going through the lily pads, just like that.
Yeah, no, I'd never seen it from Mann's,
because Mike borrowed them from me, and I never saw them again. Like so many other things,
they're probably out in that garage.
Yeah, good luck finding them.
Yeah, we'll go hunt for it after this.
Take a long time.
So the next question is going to be something that's pretty broad, and I'm just going to throw it at both of you guys. And this question is from Mike O. Mike O, please send in your customer number. Where is your favorite place to fish in the United States? Broad.
You go first.
You're going to it this week, man. I'm so jealous. The lake is up. I expect it to be up. Last I heard it was 7 feet up, and we've had rain, and lakes like Champlain, I love. Smallmouth and largemouth, dual species. You can fish for big fish, 5 minutes apart from each other. Yep. Where a lot of the lakes, you got to run, you know, like Lake Erie, you can catch giant smallmouth, and you got to run forever to get to them and get to the largemouth. They're separate, but Champlain, everything's close.
Yeah, you can catch like a largemouth and then catch a smallmouth on the next cast. Yeah, it is pretty neat,
and it's beautiful up there. And I just have always had a love affair with that lake, so it's I'd have to say Lake Champlain's my favorite.
I've got to say Clear Lake in California.
Good choice.
Been fortunate enough that we've been out there filming with Demeke a couple three or four times, and the last time we went, it wasn't quite as good. I mean, we still caught like 50 or 60 bass a day, but a lot of smaller ones.
Wasn't that good. Yeah. Slow.
Like, I mean, everybody talks about the pressure there. That's what, like, in my mind, you know, the first time I ever went, everybody talks about the California waters being so pressured, and I spent a whole week on Clear Lake and seen two boats. And I'm like, this is awesome. So, like, everything you've got to yourself, and the couple of times I've been, but, you know, I've had several trips there where you're catching you know, 30 or 40, 5 to 7 pounders a day. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well, how big is Clear Lake?
To me, it's small.
Right.
Like, it's, to me, it's very small. Like, the first day I was on Clear Lake, I made a lap all the way around the lake. Like, right. And pretty much fished everything I thought looked good.
Wow. Well, it sounds like we're going to have a Bass U meetup at Clear Lake.
Prove it.
Yeah. I've heard wonderful things about Clear Lake, and Rumbanis talks about it. A lot of people just love that place, and I've never had a chance to go out there and fish it. So
it's definitely fun. I mean, it's one to visit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we may have to put that on the Bass U bucket list this year and get out there and do it. But, Mike O, get your customer information in. Great question. I know Eric, the intern's favorite lake is right up here in North Jersey somewhere, but he won't tell anybody where it's at. Top secret.
That's right.
Top secret. Riz, you're up, buddy.
Brian, talk about a little bit about your mapping system, because you've mentioned on your show before that you run multiple units on your boat, and yep. Just elaborate a little bit on why.
The past couple of years, I've ran Lowrance and Hummingbird, and pretty much the main reason for that is so I can utilize both mapping systems. I can utilize the Navionics, and I can utilize the Lake Master, and now you've got the sea maps with Lowrance. But, you know, next year, I'm proud to say I'm going all Hummingbird, switching it up.
Wow.
So, but the one thing,
Hummingbird
too,
couldn't keep their hands off you, could they? They had to have it.
I love all their products. Yeah. I think that's the biggest reason. But, you know, some lakes back when I first started doing that, certain maps were better on certain lakes. I can use Santee for an example. On Santee Cooper, you've got two lakes, Marion and Moultrie, and the lower lake is totally mapped out on Hummingbird, but the upper lake has absolutely no contours. So having both graphs, I've got contours on the upper lake on my Lowrance and lower lake on my Hummingbird.
I got you.
So you kind of, you take a, you know, a little bit of air out of your game, out of your whole game, I guess, because you know you've got a map.
Right, right. Well, now I saw where you were using dual screens going side imaging to the left and side imaging to the
way,
right.
Yeah, way back in the day, I think I may have been one of the first guy. I might have been the first guy to run three graphs at the console.
Right.
And then they didn't have, now Hummingbird has a split screen side imaging, so you can put the top looking one way and the bottom of the graph looking the other way. So you're looking left and right, utilizing the whole length of the screen.
Oh, no kidding.
And before, you could just do, you know, on one screen, one looking right, one looking left. So if I've got a 100-foot scale on a 12-inch screen, mm-hmm. I'm looking a total of 200 feet, but I'm looking 100 feet each side. Right. So I was like, well, you know, I could buy two graphs and make one look left and one look right. So mm-hmm. I'm looking 200 feet to the left and 200 feet to the right and getting the same detail as I would with one graph looking 100 feet each side.
Right, right.
And now they've got the split screen, and I can still do that on one graph versus having to have two graphs.
Wow, that's a pretty cool feature. I didn't realize that existed. I guess we'll get a look at that tomorrow.
I think they did that because of me. That's my idea. I need to talk to them about that.
You want to get your commission.
Yeah.
Residual.
It's my idea.
Well, I was listening to some of your stuff about preparing for tournaments, and it's interesting that you talk about doing research, finding out what's going on a body of water, and then moving in a different direction.
I find myself doing that a lot.
Is that right?
Yeah, I really do. I mean, one example I like to use a lot is, say, Gunnersville or Rayburn, you know, pre-spawn tournament in February or March. Everybody's throwing a red rattle trap, and you will not find a red rattle trap on my deck that time of year. Like, I just, my mind won't let me throw what I feel like everyone else is throwing. I can't do it.
I tried to do that down at, like, Florida. I'm like, because I just watched that seminar, and I'm like, you know, I'm going in a different direction. Everybody says that you got to fish here on this lake, and did fish this deal, and so I went to a different lake, and I'm gonna brine thrift them this week, and I caught 5 pounds a day.
That's new. Now, I didn't say it works all the time. Like 50% of the time, it works every time. <I'll say that. laughs>
but that's a really interesting approach, because I mean it's so hard though. You know, it's kind of like doc talk that you're doing your research, and that stuff creeps into your mind.
Yeah,
and you know, especially when it gets tough and you're struggling, you find yourself going to the doc talk or what you read or what you heard.
Right, but my train of thought is there's always a better way to catch them.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how good everybody's catching them, there's a better way to catch them.
Right.
So you just got to go with that mind frame and go try different stuff to find that better way to catch them.
Yeah, that's an amazing tip. And it's hard to do.
Very hard to do.
But and it makes you unique, to be honest. I mean, you don't hear that kind of talk, because I know Mike and I have been doing research for years, and we try to collect like commonalities. Like we see red rattletrap popping up over and over and over again. So we go move in the direction of that. But I could, you know, I get your point, man. It's like, you know, everybody's going to be doing that. You can fish in an area where people have been and have success by
finding
something subtly different.
Right, you can pick up a few fish. I mean, you still might get started with it, you know, but it's always good to have something else.
Yeah.
How do you find the balance to not let that spin you out, though, and chase too many dead ends and goose chases and fooling around with stuff that...
I guess the way I see that is I feel like I know that... Well, we'll use the rattle trap. I know that's my fail safe, the red rattle trap at Gunnersville. If I don't find anything else in my mind, I feel like I can just tie that red rattle trap on and go catch them. So I can spend my whole practice looking for something that's unique that I'm going to have to myself. And if I don't find it, you know, I can just get on a grass line and throw a rattle trap and find them during the tournament. So
I see.
It's kind of like...
You always have that to go to.
Right. You've always got that in your pocket, so why beat it up and run it in practice?
I agree with that. Yeah. I kind of live by that mantra. I try not to go out and do the same thing all the time.
Right.
You know, if I find something that works, I'll sometimes catch a fish and change.
Yeah. I mean, you've got an 8-hour tournament day, so, I mean, there's no sense in beating up the stuff you know you're probably going to fish or know if it's probably going to work during practice. I mean, you might as well just fish it during the tournament. Just go blind and maybe you get pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. Give yourself a chance to win. You know,
sometimes it works.
Constantly be looking for that winning dominant pattern. I mean, that's, you can always fall back.
Yeah, that's like the bridges at Gunnersville. I mean, everybody fishes the bridges, but, you know, I'm not going to fish one in practice because I know there's fish there.
Right. Well, you got to go, if you guys haven't watched that, that's available over on Bashu TV. You got to go listen to Brian strategize about how he does that. It's going to help everybody's fishing. What do you got back there?
Let's hit a trivia question.
Trivia already?
A Ken Duke trivia question.
Ken Duke.
The master.
The master.
What do you get if you win?
What do you get if you win, Rich?
You get a TH Marine product, one of our...
And we're going to go with a TH Marine prop nut.
Oh,
awesome.
This little beauty.
Awesome little deal. Reduces vibration. Hold that baby up. Reduces vibration. It's just an amazing little tool by TH Marine. We all have them. What's the question?
All right. And the question is, the Bassmaster Elite Series closes out its regular season at Lake Gunnersville this week. It will be the 24th BASS tournament held at that venue since 1976, and 19 different anglers have won there, but only one of them is currently fishing the Elite Series. Whom is it?
Interesting.
Yes.
I'm going to have to think about that one myself. Man,
currently fishing the Elite Series and has won there.
That's right.
Has Jay Yellis ever won there?
That was a thought that was in my head, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think he may have.
Just remember, you can't win, Pete. But you can be disqualified and thrown out of the room.
Shut up. Stop guessing.
I can only might be upstairs or somewhere close by. I'll replace you in a heartbeat, bro.
Go back.
That's a tough one. Like, I'm racking my brain trying to think.
Yeah.
I'm interested to hear what this is.
We have a winner.
Who's the winner?
Already came in at 7:36 and 7 seconds. Dave Hall. Dave Hall, please send in your customer number.
And the answer is?
Rick Klun.
Ah, Rick Klun.
Now, that was kind of, yeah.
Duh.
Damn, yeah, duh.
Come on.
Rick Klun, who won the 1976 Bassmaster Classic and the 67 Alabama Invitational. Does that say 67 or 87?
It's probably 87.
87.
Yeah,
it says get glasses.
Rick Klun, congratulations for being the answer to the question. But we were just talking about Rick the other night because one of our subscribers at Bass U TV on the forum, and you guys, I want to invite you guys to go check out the forum at bassu.tv. Any questions you guys have about your body of water, your fishing, any of the seminars, we'll take care of you. We're on our forum all the time, helping guys out, answer questions, directing them to the great content. But one of the questions was, at 55 years old, he finds himself finally able to afford it, maybe retired, and he can pursue his love of fishing. Is it too late?
Nah.
You don't think so?
Nah, never too late.
Never too late.
That's the beautiful thing about bass fishing. It doesn't matter age, body type. Anybody can do it. I mean, a 10-year-old could go win a tournament just as well as anybody else.
That's a fact. And it, male, female, too. We just saw our girl win in the kayak world.
Krista Fisher.
Krista Fisher. We had her. We interviewed her at the Bassmaster Classic. And she qualified for the Hobie Nationals.
Yes.
On Kentucky Lake, was that?
Yeah. Yep.
Excellent.
Yeah, she won on Kentucky Lake, right?
I can't remember. I remember seeing the win in pictures of her.
Yeah.
And I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, it was a major. It was a major win. Yep. Mm-hmm. It's pretty awesome.
Congratulations.
And Ike's son, Vegas, who's what, 8 years old?
Yeah.
Should have won the event this weekend. And he fished a tournament up in North Jersey this weekend. And I think a drop shot in Eric? Ned rig? Throwing a Ned rig. And he would have won, but Mike didn't teach Becky how to tie the braid to fluoro lead or not. So he had two big smallmouth come off at the boat.
Oh.
Yep.
Broken leader.
Broken leader.
Oh, yep. My goodness.
Got it all the way to the boat, though.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, good for congratulations to Vegas.
Approval of the dean. The y'all tell me.
David Hall. David Hall. Is that? I wonder if that's David Hall from Pennsylvania that fished a bunch of tournaments and extremely talented angler.
Yeah, and so the question is going to be from Adam L. Adam L., please send in your customer number. Brian, when you are fishing brush piles, do you fish brush piles differently when you're fishing in 20 feet or more water, and do you change with water clarity?
Definitely change with water clarity. I mean, that pretty much determines how deep a structure, how deep a brush I'm going to fish. You know, if I don't have at least 2 feet of visibility, I'm not going to fish much deeper than 8 or 10 feet deep. You know, I want to have at least 3 to 4 feet of visibility to get down there in that 15 to 20 foot range. But when you're talking brush fishing, you really, it doesn't matter how deep it is. It matters more how tall the structure is. So you may be setting in 20 feet of water to the bottom, but if the brush pile is 10 foot tall, you're still fishing 10 feet of water. So that's something you got to think about and take into account there. But I mean, I've fish from 5 feet to 25 feet. It really just determines on water clarity.
That's pretty good observation. So you find in off-colored water, those fish just typically won't go deep?
I think they're still deep, but it's harder to catch them.
Gotcha.
It's harder to, you've got to put that bait right in their face when they're deep. I mean, it's just harder to get them to bite. It takes longer. It takes more effort.
Right.
Nobody wants to work that hard. So, you know, go to 8 or 10 feet of water where you can put the bait right in their face, and they've got a little more light penetration. I mean, yeah, they can feel that bait coming through the water, but there's still a lot of largemouth, especially smallmouth spots. Everybody knows there's a lot of sight feeders. So you want to put that bait right on them.
And your number one choice, whether it's in 2 feet or 20 feet, is going to be a reaction bait.
Yeah, especially if I've got dirtier water, that's when I'm going to start with a chatterbait or crankbait. I want something moving that's, you know, making some noise that I can get down there and bang in the brush pile. And then if the clearer the water is, kind of a slower presentation I go with, you know, be it a worm like a Damiki Stinger or something like that on a Texas rig or a Ned rig or something like that, or is what I tend to go to in a clearer water situation versus dirty water.
Does that, you know, kind of piss you off when you got to slow down and actually drown a worm in a brush pile?
Well, I say slow down, but really I'm still just making three or four casts with that worm in the brush pile. I mean, if he's there, he's going to look at my thought process on it is, you know, I want to find the five biggest, most aggressive fish each day. I mean, I don't want to have to beg them to bite. If I fish 70 places and I feel like I put my bait in a higher percentage area to put it in front of five fish that are willing to bite instead of having to sit there and make them bite.
Right, right.
You know, but that's different versus, I guess, when you're fishing a lake that the fish kind of feed on current, like a Tennessee River lake,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of a different deal because those fish are sitting there the whole time and you kind of got to make them bite.
Right.
Versus a lake with no flow, like where I learned on Lake Norman. I mean, there's no flow on Norman, so the fish are either there or they're not there. They're either going to bite or they're not going to bite, so you got to keep moving.
Gotcha. Well, and the current in, you know, on Kentucky Lake, if there's no flow, it's hard.
Yeah.
You got to get tricky.
And I think one thing that kind of clued me in onto that run-and-gun type bite like that is way back in the day before side imaging, I bought an underwater camera because this little lake we fish, Moss Lake, me and Matt fished the little Thursday nighters out there. You know, it used to get so tough in the summer. In the springtime, it would take 12 to 15 pounds to win. But once June, July, August rolled around, you know, you might win the night tournament with 5 or 6 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, man, I know these fish are still here. Why? What's going on? I mean, they're somewhere in the lake. So I was like, I'm going to go buy a camera. I'm going to figure out where they're at. And I would pull up on these brush piles and I would fish them for 30 minutes and not get a bite. And then I'd go drop my camera down in there and there'd be 10 or 15 swimming around in it. You just couldn't catch them. They're like in a negative mood, cannot make them bite. And that's when it clicked on me, you know, I need to run as many as I can to try to put my bait in front of one that wants to bite.
Makes a lot of sense. Have you done anything like drive over the brush pile? Have you used any strategies like that to try to stir them up to get them active?
I have not. I mean, I've heard people say that works. I know I've heard it a lot with schooling fish, you know, it makes the bait flee and stuff like that. I mean, I guess it could work, but I'm going to think as many times as it worked, it would probably hurt you that many times as well.
Right, right.
So I don't see a need in it.
Ever drop a live shiner down in there?
No, never did that.
It's frowned upon in FLW terms.
Yeah, they don't like
can
that.
Can be effective.
Yeah.
But, Riz, you got another question for me back there?
Go ahead, buddy, Rich.
I do. Warren wants to know, can practice diminish an angler's ability to use your gut instinct on tournament day?
Oh, goodness.
That's a great question. That though, is a good question. To be honest with you, who asked that question?
Warren.
Can what you know, find at practice, you know, hurt your decision making in tournaments?
It did early in my career. It definitely did. I mean, because I feel like the longer you fish multi-day events, travel tournaments, like fishing professionally, the more confidence you develop in yourself to find fish during the actual tournament. So early on, yeah, it definitely hurt me. Like, if I was on a pattern and it didn't work, you know, I would keep running it 5 or 6 hours and try to force it to work. And whereas now, after doing it for 12 years, you know, if I start out an hour and it's not working, I can pull the plug on it and just go do something else and not have a second thought about it.
Right, right.
So that's hard to do. It is very hard to do, and I think that's just something that comes with experience. I don't think, you know, you can say, well, this is how you've got to quit thinking about it. It's just something that comes with experience. And just over time, you'll get over it. You're like, that's not working. I go find something else. I mean,
It's a disappointing though. Sometimes
it is very disappointing. Now I'm not going to sit here and say I don't think all day like, oh man, if those fish were still there, I'd be good. You know, I still say that during the day, but you've got a bail on it when you know you've got a bail on it.
That's right. You got to pack your bag.
Yep.
It is. It's the hardest thing to overcome in fishing because at practice you go out and you get some quality bites on brush piles. Let's say you know. You know, you got a brush pile that you threw in there three times and you swam off three fish.
Yep.
And that's your starting spot. and you can't wait. You're up all night. You're thinking about that. You're thinking about them 5-pounders jumping on your crankbait and you wheel up there and it doesn't happen.
Yep.
Right? It doesn't, or even worse, another competitor's on there. But, you know, it's not happening and you're demoralized. So Warren, it's a great observation. It's a great question because that's the thing that you've got to efficiently overcome. Like you said, you got to be able to give up on it and know when to do it.
And I won't give up on it until I've pretty much exhausted a lot of options. Like, especially if it's a place like a ledge or, you know, a row of docks or something like that. I mean, I'll give them 5 or 6 different bait presentations just to assure myself that, you know, like say you're catching them on top water and you go down the bank without a top water bite. I mean, I'm going to turn around and go back up that bank, maybe throwing a subsurface bait and then go back down it, dragging a bait on the bottom. And, you know, after you do that, you've pretty much covered the whole water column. If you still haven't caught them, you know, odds are those fish have moved or they're just in a negative mood and they're not going to bite anyway. So it kind of reassures you that, you know, it's definitely time to bail on this deal.
Right. And then here's a piece of advice for Warren and guys like you and everybody that's been helpful is when you're up dreaming about those 5-pounders, you got to also dream about what could be the adjustment, right? Could it be a bait?
Right.
Switch? If, you know, could it be that, all right, well, they were on the brush piles. Could they move? Is there any habitat they could move to? Is there any, if the wind changes direction, what could be the solution to that? So you spend your time, I spend my time thinking about solutions so that when I do have to bail, it's not the first time I'm thinking about it.
Right. It's kind of like fishing condition, like the conditions you've got, you know. I mean, like one thing I've always said is practicing in the rain is, to me, I don't like practicing in the rain because the fish lie to you. They do stuff they don't normally do. Yeah. And during an event, you know, if you've got a sunny practice and then all of a sudden first day of a tournament, it's kind of drizzly and a little windy and, you know, cloudy, those fish are going to do things they didn't do during practice. So whereas you were catching them on a jig around docks, you may have to pick up a spinnerbait and burn rocky banks or something like that. Just fish the wind, fish the conditions. I mean, that's the biggest mystery. And one thing I love so much about bass fishing is you never know exactly what's going on. Like you may be dialed in catching them, but you still don't know exactly what's going on.
Sure.
And it's always a mystery and it's fun.
The playing field is ever evolving.
Yeah, exactly.
Throughout the day.
It's funny. And you know, I've had practices where, like you said, the fish lie to you.
Yeah.
And like you're doing a rain and I go out and I have a red flag. Like a red flag goes off. If I go out and I catch like 3 or 5 4-pounders, I just stop and say, there's no way this is happening in the tournament. They are lying to me. Right. This is an anomaly. Something's wrong. But this is an unstable pattern that is going to fizzle. So I better start thinking.
That happens to everybody, though. It's not just you, Pete. It's everybody.
The power of on positive thinking.
Yeah.
Well, it gets delusional. You're like, oh, I'm going to catch 30 pounds. And there's never been a 30-pound bag waiting in that lake. And you're like, this is not happening. The red flag is up. Yeah. But hey, a great question. Great question, Warren. We're going to take a quick break here, guys. We got a lot more coming. We got more trivia questions. A lot of great prizes at the end of the show. We're going to be giving away some of our grand prizes. One's worth $85. The other's $200, 200 beans. And guys over on Facebook, quit your lollygagging. Get over here and join the party at bassu.tv. We got it. Now's time to do it. Get over. and sign up. You sign up for 30 days free right now. You can use the code BASHULIVE19. But come on over and join us. We'll, if we use your question on the air, we're going to extend your subscription even further than 30 days free. So come on over and do that. Like I said, lots more trivia questions to come. On Facebook, if you absolutely refuse, which pisses me off, but like us, share us over there on Facebook. We got a great prize for you that's worth a pile.
That's right.
It's like 85 bucks.
Or 97.
97. I remember
a Gen 2 pole system and a G-Force hand.
Yes. We're going to hook you guys up with some TH products. And thanks to TH Marine for providing us with all these great gifts that we're giving away. They make the best stuff in boating. Everybody that has a boat uses TH products.
And they got you covered from bow to stern.
That's
they've
a
foul got bow. Everything.
Yes.
Yep.
That's what's cool.
Lighting, trolling motor, G-Juice, jack plates.
Yeah, all the way to motor toters, everything.
Yep. And even Eric the intern uses their power stick.
Yes, he does.
For his GoPro.
Yep.
Yes, he does.
Yes. They have got everything. And we love TH. And we are going to be right back with the great Brian Thrift answering your questions, talking more bass fishing. We'll see you in just a few minutes.